Hi, I'm Bess Godin, and welcome to Millennial Splaining. So, I bet you're wondering, who is this bitch? Who died and made her the ultimate authority to speak for her entire generation? Well, the answer is, I'm nobody. I have no authority whatsoever. Like so many millennials, I was told to get an education. Then, I graduated into a barren and opportunity-less economy. We are the most overeducated and underemployed. The greatest minds of my generation go unheard. They are too busy serving coffee, flipping burgers, moving boxes, babysitting, and pumping gas to survive. All the while applying to better jobs that they are also overqualified for, but for which they know they'll never get an interview. And finally, at the end of a long day, we have time not to relax, but to work on our blogs and YouTube channels so we can have some modicum of expression in a world where we are told daily that we are disposable. And with each of these desperate efforts to grab hold of the national microphone, we find ourselves slipping further and further away from it because the world doesn't want to hear our problems. By corporate reinforced choice, we are a generation lost in obscurity. So hi, Tara. Thank you so much for joining me on Millennial Splaining.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming. Really looking forward to talking to you. I did just read your book. I absolutely love it. Left Out When the Truth Doesn't Fit In, right? That's the title. I was immediately struck by how beautifully written it was. I just wanted to say that. We'll start this interview off with a couple compliments. Throw you some softballs. How about that?
That's okay. That sounds great. Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that you like the book. Yeah.
Yes.
So yes. I would encourage anyone who gets it on Amazon, The Evil Empire, to overtake the trolls that were on it and leave a review if you read it. So thank you.
I actually just did yesterday. I left a glowing review.
You're sweet.
So yes. Please, everyone, go do that because it's an excellent book. So, as a disclaimer to everyone watching right now, if you don't know the story behind Tara and what happened to her with Biden, if you don't, if you think you have any doubts or whatever, please go read her book. Please go watch the interview that she did with Katie Halper, okay? Because if you don't believe her after those things, I don't know what's wrong with you. She's the most credible person, even over Christine Blasey Ford, I thought, that I've heard in a long time. So, yes, I cannot support you more, Tara.
Thank you. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I support Dr. Ford as I do, but I appreciate the observation that she's gotten a lot of support where pretty much the whole, I feel like the entire half the country turned their back on me. So yeah.
It's yeah.
Stunning, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I have several things that, I'd like to discuss on that issue, but for the one thing, it makes me angry that because I feel like you didn't fit into the narrative of what we were expecting to hear from a survivor. Maybe that was part of it as well. It's definitely because the Democrats throttled you in every way. I mean, they just cut off mm-hmm. your kneecap your access at every point. So, that's number one. But, I think that for, Christine Blasey Ford, because she, did the whole, I don't know. She just sort of appeared like, I'm upset, but I'm affected. And that was just the one note that we saw of her. Right. Whereas you are a whole person. I see you and I see, a woman who's tender, a woman who's funny, a woman who's smart. I think that that's evident in everything that you do. And, not that Dr. Ford is in all those things as well, but just the way that, we saw her on the news compared to the way that I experienced you to begin with, I immediately related to you, right off the bat. I felt a lot of people,
I felt like a lot of women in my generation did as well, because we, you know, we really felt like, you know, that things had been happening to us for a long time and that we were being silenced about them for a long time. And then when you came out, we just felt like, yes, like, yes. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Anyway, I'll stop my blowing smoke right now, but I mean, like, that was particularly why I was interested to have you on, because I think that when history, you know, looks back at you after we're all long gone, you know, they're going to see a feminist hero. I really believe that.
Well, because thank you.
We all, you know, are, you. You know, okay. Yeah, honestly, seriously, because we are, you know, like, we all felt seen, I think, by you in a lot of ways, you know, the people who were paying mm-hmm. attention. So, yeah. So why don't you tell me a little bit, if you want to just like give an intro or, I don't know. I just felt like I talked a lot for there a minute. do you want to say anything off the bat or?
Sure. You know, like I appreciate it. I feel like the ship is kind of turning in the sense that a lot of corruption is being exposed right now through, the reporting that Joe DeCantor did, regarding Time's Up and the leadership and the corruption, and their embeddedness with the Democratic Party. So you're seeing a lot of what I was been kind of yelling into the void for the last few months, or actually 2 years. It's true. And Alison Tricos is an amazing activist who, along with another Time's Up person, you know, got us kind of all together with that letter. And I think that letter was very powerful. And one of the things we asked is that the board step down, and they did. So it's, you know, it's pretty, it kind of shows you, it gives you hope that no matter how big the machine is, you can expose the corruption, and you can be heard if you try, but you have to be persistent. You have to be patient, and you have to be, you know, resilient, and you have to be, you know, you just have to keep going. And I have kept going. I mean, I've just not stopped. So, and my message has been clear from the beginning that I wasn't just, when I came forward about Joe Biden, it didn't just become about Joe Biden. It's about every person standing behind me trying to come forward about a powerful person that utilizes a machine to shut them down and to marginalize them and to destroy them for telling the truth. And, you know, this country has no respect for whistleblowers, and that's the problem. So.
No respect for whistleblowers, no respect for women who don't fit in, no respect for people who don't fit into the narrative, you know, in general. Absolutely. Right. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things also that struck me about your story is that, it seems to me like I'm going to blow more smoke here, but, you are such a smart and, intelligent, passionate writer that, you know, it makes me angry that I didn't find out about you because you wrote a great novel. You know what I'm saying? Like, it makes me angry that, you know, you had these experiences, and because of that, you were sort of kneecapped in life in a lot of different ways. And I know that you had other traumas that you were dealing with and had other life experiences that also contributed to your situation. But like, I know that this was a part of it. And but this was probably the beginning. I did talk to Professor Zenkis a little while ago, and we talked about complex trauma. And I mean, I definitely feel that from a different perspective, because I took care of my parents when they were dying of cancer. And then I also took care of my grandfather. I understand what it's like to sort of like get the first trauma and then get a little bit more and a little bit more, and that first trauma really messes you up. And again, like, I'm not trying to make it. And I don't know, you know, the specifics, but that was huge. And the fact that, you know, your fight to come out was so difficult. I really do hope a tide is turning. I really do. And I think, you know, with the Cuomo thing and with Tina Chen, right? As she stepped down. Yeah, I mean, that's...
And Hillary Rosen has stepped down.
Oh, excellent. I didn't hear that. Great, great. Yes. Yeah.
But, and the entire board stepped down Friday of Time's Up.
Wow. Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting because I have a journal and I made a list of names. You know, I wanted restorative justice and I made a list of names that I wanted, you know, some justice about. And I just ticked off all the names except Biden. So now we got to do Biden.
Yes. Oh, my God.
So Time's Up. You know, and I don't feel like there's been total restorative justice for us, but I feel like them stepping down was a huge, huge statement. And it also makes me wonder legally, like, geez, what are they hiding from and running from? So
that's an
so excellent. That'll be found out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
to be sure, the skeletons that you see are not all of them that are in that closet, for sure.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I would say, you know, that we're heading in the right direction, but now we have to keep going. We really have to galvanize. Always been willing to go under oath, and I hope there's an investigation into Joe Biden. It takes one member of Congress. And I think that we're getting closer to that reality. And I hope that we do. So.
Yes. Yes. I hope so too. There are so few success stories. I mean, and not that this is a success story yet by any means, but I mean, that's a huge step. And, you know, it's, you know, it's definitely a glimmer of light in a darkening world. So that's exciting to me to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. The Time's Up stepping down. Yeah, they do. We still need accounting. We need a forensic accounting of how they spent the money. Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. They have $25 million. What are they doing with it? Who have they helped? Who have they not helped? Where is that money? Who enriched themselves with those donations? We need to know. And so there needs to be an exposure. I think a congressional hearing would definitely be a mechanism to look at if there's been White House ethics violations, all of those things.
Absolutely. So,
you know, absolutely. If there's been crossover between Hillary Rosen, between Anita Dunn, and I mean, all of that. Like, was there secret meetings at the White House? If so, that's an ethics violation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I don't know if anyone's going to take that on, but I would welcome it if they did, especially if it was one of the squad. That would be better, right? If one of those people who says there's a survivor actually did something in Congress that was for survivors.
Yeah.
That would be
thanks. Nice. I'm happy to join in the call on that. AOC, do your job. Do your job. Call an investigation. Make this happen. And I don't think I have it on me. I'll probably cut it in later, but I wanted to I wanted to show you a TikTok of, like, it came out right during the primaries, and okay. It was of a girl who, I don't know, she was young, probably like in her early 20s. And she's just like in her like tie dye pajamas or whatever, you know, shaking like a pill bottle. And she just was screaming at the top of her lungs, chanting, please don't make me vote for Joe Biden.
Democrats, please don't make me vote for Joe Biden. Please don't make me vote for Joe Biden. Please don't make me vote for Joe Biden. I don't want to vote for Joe Biden.
And that was because of you. That was because of you. A lot of it was because of you. And I, you know, you were the turning point in making me realize that how much Joe Biden is actually lots, you know, like Trump. And he's done a lot of things since he's been elected to prove that he's a lot like Trump, and like he's Trump. Forward a lot of his policies. And, you know, I just really see you, you know, I connected with you on that. So you were one of the things that really, you know, started to radicalize me, because I wasn't, you know, I didn't come into the Bernie crowd until much later. I've always been more of a feminist than anything else, even though I'm also a socialist. So, you know, I paid more attention to your story, I think, than other people's. And I don't know, I just, you know, I just personally want to thank you for coming out and doing what you do, because it's beautiful. And I also love that, you know, I would love to talk more about your upcoming podcast and the articles that you've been writing for RT as well. They've been excellent. You know, it's awesome to see that you're coming out and you're not just like, you know, letting this one incident sort of become you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're coming out and you're showing everything about yourself and every intelligence that you have, you know, and that's beautiful and empowering to me. Because again, like when you see survivors in the media, you see them either as, you know, like the crying survivor, or as like the, you know, unfortunately, it's, you know, I call it the choice between Marys, right? Like Mary Mother or Mary, you know, the prostitute, and like that you're painted one way or another, right? So it's beautiful to me that you're coming out as a full person and you're not, you know, like you don't have to sort of cling to one thing, you know. I don't know. What do you think about that? Is that weird?
No. I think the rape myths are all around us. You know, I mean, you saw them come out in full force with my coming forward, and it's 2021. Nothing's changed since the 1990s, which is unfortunate, and it needs to, because come on, we've got to be past all of this. And, you know, I think that I've been fortunate enough to have this love of writing. And so writing is sort of my cathartic way of dealing with things. And I'm pretty good at it. And, you know, I was lucky enough to land with RT doing the op-eds, and I'm really happy to be with them. I'm really proud. They have a lot of really talented people working for them, and I'm lucky that they select my op-eds. So, so that's given me a platform to have my voice, and I get to choose what I want to write about, and I have a lot of freedom, and I love that. And that's important. And then of course my novel, which I did the memoir, which is nonfiction, and then the novel is fiction. That's called The Last Snow Tiger. And I'm trying to have that finished by this fall or winter at latest. And I had to kind of regroup on that, but it's called The Last Snow Tiger, like I said, and New York Times referenced it because I had been writing the novel and studied about Russia. And so one of the things they came at me with was that I was a Russian agent. So, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I just sort of leaned into it. I just was like, right, whatever. Okay, I'm a Russian agent. Like, whatever. So, yeah, I would be the worst one ever, like, because I have no useful information, but okay. So, and plus I'm pretty open, so I don't think I'm very stealth, you know, whatever. So I think there's many reasons why I would be bad at it, but also I'm not. So that's that. So it was just weird that the New York Times and Washington Post harped on that. And so it was, and the Atlantic, and who else? AP, CNN. But it was always like kind of humming underneath. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't believe me for this reason, well, don't believe her for that reason. They had to have layers of reasons, or like make me so unlikable that then no one would believe me. So
right.
That was the other technique. So let's make her so unlikable that even if you did believe her, you don't like her. So, you know, and it's a technique that PR uses, and, you know, Joe Biden paid $2.2 million for his PR. So according to FEC, so that's what you get.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes me ill, and I'm sorry that it happened to you. Yeah. It's awesome to see your attitude. Despite that, you have a really positive and warm attitude. So that's amazing to see. You know, it's weird. Like, I really believed in the Russiagate crap during the Trump era. I big time believed in the Russiagate. Yeah. I had a weird, like, I had a Ryan Knight sort of come to Jesus moment when the primaries happened. And recently as this primary, I even voted for Hillary back in the day because, you know, she was a woman and I didn't think any more about it. Anyway, so Yeah, I really bought into it. I listened to a podcast called Gaslit Nation, and they were, you know, very much about breaking down all of the, you know, connections Trump has to Russia and stuff like that. And a lot of this stuff is facts. A lot of that stuff is like, you know, yeah, he has friends in Russia, and yeah, he has apartments over there, and they have apartments here, and whatever, whatever. But at the same time, it's like, I didn't realize that the same type of, you know, the same type of corruption was happening within the DNC. It was happening with, you know, a lot of different, you know, like Biden has connections to Russia too, right? Like, like you can't be in the political game, right? And not have some connections to, you know, Russia, I would think at some point,
they're
right?
Not, like, they're not our enemy, right? And they're not our enemy. That's propaganda. We're economically, I mean, right now they're capitalists, obviously, and they're economically intertwined on an international community of economics, investments and all of that, and energy and technology and commerce, all different kinds of commerce. And, you know, if we had a more cooperative relationship with them, imagine the innovation and the things that we could do.
Yeah.
Just collectively. It would be amazing, because it would be such a great partnership. It's such a missed opportunity that we're demonizing a whole country and using xenophobia, you know, a message of fear. And like you mentioned that you believed it. Well, you have Rachel Maddow getting paid millions of dollars to sit there and cram that down your throat every day, just shouting, shouting, shouting. It's so sad. It's so disgusting. And like you don't hear them doing that to us. They don't. And you don't hear the Russian president do that to us. I think that, you know, I just kind of feel embarrassed sometimes by America and how juvenile our discourse is, and how if you expand your world and go to anywhere in Europe and you talk about geopolitical landscapes, it's such a different conversation. And there's a lot more emotional intelligence. And that's what our country is lacking. It's lacking emotional intelligence. And we need to elevate the conversation and move beyond it. And xenophobia and bigotry just has no place right now in trying to solve some of the problems we need to solve, like climate change and other things. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, 1,000,000%, 1,000,000%. And, you know, frankly, I'm tired of seeing, you know, like at this point, sorry, geriatric politicians make decisions that are essentially kicking the can down the road for our generation. I'm really sick of it. And because the other thing, you know, the other thing is that Biden is really just getting up there. No, you know what I mean? And I took care of my grandpa. He had dementia. I saw it happen to him, how it gradually started and then got worse and worse and worse. And I see some of those things in Biden. Honestly, it scares me, you know? And so I personally would like to see, some legislation floated about an upper age limit to be president eventually. But, you know, at this point, like I really feel the tides are going to turn for you, as you said before, because we were so relieved that Trump was gone, so relieved, and now we're starting to see that our lives are not any better whatsoever. We literally have less money from Biden from COVID and the stimulus than we do from Trump. How ridiculous is that?
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And then unemployment benefits just ended. Yeah, I know. It's the pandemic is raging. The variants are surging, and they're not doing anything about it to really systemically address it.
Yes.
Because they're afraid politically of what it would do. Well, newsflash, it's done. Like, the damage has been done to the Democratic Party. They've all done it to themselves. Yep. And 2022 is going to be a bloodbath. I mean, it's just going to be a mess. And they know it. And they see it in the numbers, because they're not, there's 40% of the base that want a higher income minimum wage. They want Medicare for all. They want, you know, they want eviction moratoriums. They want help to stay home during the pandemic.
Yes.
And every other country, developed nation anyway, has been paying workers to stay home and giving some sort of stimulus, except ours. And I think the sooner that we address this, the better. I mean, the sooner that we address the politicians' unwillingness to take a political risk and say, shut it down for 2 months so that we can, like, have this over. As soon as we can say, forgive all student loan debts and really fight for that. Like they gave this sort of, I don't know, virtue signaling or whatever, but they didn't really do anything. They could have, like, Biden could have ended student loan debt and he didn't.
Yeah.
So again, you have almost half the base that wanted that. You have 70% of the country that wants Medicare for all. You have a majority of the country that does not want any more, you know, foreign interference with wars. They want us to work on our own domestic policies. So do it. Forgive the student loan debt, raise the minimum wage, you know, change these things. And he kept talking about bipartisan reach out. There's no bipartisan reach out. There's none to be had. Like, what are they doing? They have the House, the Senate, and the presidency, but they won't for long. So either make change or don't, but don't talk about it. Do it.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Yeah. 300%. Yeah.
And then if you criticize any one of them, they act like it's the end of the world and it's ridiculous. You know, yeah. You have all the, on social media, you have all what they call the blue MAGA come out, the people that are just like, oh, they're little troll farms. They pay these troll farms, troll bots to just come out and just spew a message, talking points. And nothing's going to change until we really address all of this in a systemic way.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. And I don't believe that. You know, I personally don't believe that it's going to be as easy as getting money out of politics or voting in more progressives. You know, I mean, I think that we're going to really need a multi-pronged approach of really making change, and it's going to really have to come from the people.
People need to stop thinking that mommy and daddy are going to take care of it, because there is no mommy or daddy. We are the government. We have to take care of it. That's a democracy. If you really want a democracy, then that's what it is. It's you being participating in it, not just by voting for someone who you think is like a father figure or grandfather figure to do things and be in it and continue the patriarchy. It's about upending things that don't work and not going with the status quo and trying innovative things that do work. And, you know, whenever politicians do that, there's a little bit of backlash, but it's effective. And I mean, for all their criticism of, like, for say Russia, Vladimir Putin took their country out of abject poverty. He took it out and gave them back a middle class within a decade and kicked out the oligarchs that were robbing the country. You know, we don't have anyone regulating our oligarchs, American oligarchs. If we did, they'd be paying taxes, you know, like Jeff Bezos or some of the other American oligarchs. Why aren't they paying taxes? That's my point. So people always get all up, you know, whatever about, you know, Russia or whatever. I'm like, well, they control their oligarchs. Like they're doing it. Like, why can't we, why can't America, why can't we get just the basics of them to pay? Can you imagine making millions of dollars to be where they're at and then not paying one bit of income tax? That's amazing to me. And they still get away with it.
Yeah. And like these laws, there are laws on the books that are enforceable now. It's a choice that they're getting, you know, like that they're being allowed to get away with it. The choice. Yeah. And I believe also that, you know, we talked a lot about 3D chess, right, in 2020. And we talked a lot, the squad essentially was trying to make moves behind the scenes and whatever. But I think that, you know, we were waiting for them, you know, we were waiting for them to be our leaders, as you said, when in reality, you know, they are the pieces. They are the pieces on the board. Okay. We are the players. The workers are the players, workers against the aristocracy, I like to call them. You know, essentially those are the two sides, and we need to treat the squad and we need to treat our representatives in general as if they are the pieces on the board, and we have to encourage them to move in the way that we want them to do so. So,
I don't know. I mean, I think that it's even deeper than that. The criticism of the squad has been, you know, necessary, but we want to stay away from misogyny, and because there's been a lot of misogynistic attacks on them. So, and that's been my argument with that.
There's a lot of ways to I'm sorry. Did you want to say, did I cut you off?
No, that what I wanted to say is that I just feel like they're just one person. Like AOC is just one person. Cori Bush, one person. They're doing what they can do in a system that doesn't want them to do it. So really who we need to go after is Nancy Pelosi and Chuck sure. Schumer and Dianne Feinstein, who's like fossilized in her chair.
Yeah, so. That's for sure. No, I completely agree with that. But I think there are many ways to pressure someone. And I don't think that yelling at them all the time is necessarily the most productive way of doing it. I think that there are ways that we can pressure our Congress people that are, you know, sort of like the carrot and the stick. You know what I'm saying? We reward you when you do good.
We can evolve, even evolve past the carrot and the stick. Let's look at it as more of a collective conversation about what's working, what's not. Okay, it's not working to have an unhealthy workforce. I mean, why are you going to have a workforce that's unhealthy if you're a capitalist? That doesn't make any sense, right? It's not even logical. So why not pass Medicare for All, where you can do more preventative health and you can help have a healthy working class? It's like with sexual assault, it's like having the conversation. Well, okay, let's not put sexual predators in power. Let's not cover up for them. Let's not enable nonprofits to be a catch and kill like Time's Up did. You know, so it's making practical suggestions and having a conversation. So you move beyond the carrot and the stick and you move to reality, what's working, what's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, so. That's good. That's an excellent point. But I do unfortunately think that it, you know, has to do a lot more with, you know, who's pulling the strings behind the curtains than, you know, what AOC thinks is a person. You know, I think that what I'm trying to express is that, you know, it's not, you know, yet like the public are people that we need to convince, right? Like the arguments mm-hmm. that we make, we are important to make in the media, in the public eye, and to get your talking points out there. But when it comes to dealing with your Congress people, I really believe that, you know, we're in a power struggle between corporations and grassroots activists, right? So that's mm-hmm. kind of what I was getting at. And I absolutely do not
support. Absolutely.
Yeah, I absolutely do not support misogynist pressure. I've certainly been the recipient of a lot of misogyny in my life. I do not encourage it. So that's not what I was trying to say.
And I know you're not trying to say that, but I'm saying what I've been seeing online is you'll see people that just kind of pile on and then do that misogyny thing. It's like, I don't agree with a Kamala Harris on a lot of things. She's pretty conservative Democrat to me. She's pretty mainstream, but I didn't like what I saw when they were like accusing her of, you know, sex trade for power. It was ridiculous. She worked hard to get where she is, and it had nothing to do with sex, but you saw those misogynistic comments coming from liberals, coming from, you know, I just think neoliberalism in general is going to destroy our country more than conservatism. It's going to be like a combination of those two, just like wreaking havoc.
Yes.
We need to abolish it. We need to have a different view. And I think you bringing up Ryan Knight is a good point. He has some really practical views on the matter. He's really something. He's really, a good independent thinker.
He is. He's excellent. I love the way he puts everything. And there's a reason that I say that my progression is like a Ryan Knight progression, because he really, you know, he expressed what I lived, I felt like, while I was doing it. Yeah. Right. You know, so that's specifically why I say that. And hopefully I'll get him on my show one day. We'll see. But what was my point? Yeah, there is a lot of misogyny on the left. Let's not even pretend, right? So like let's go back to that for a second, because I don't care how communist you think you are. I don't care how, you know, whatever, like how anarchist, equalist, whatever you want to call yourselves. I don't care if you are telling women that their opinion is wrong because you can't out argue them. If you're telling women that their place is in the kitchen, which I've had people say to me when I make an argument that they can't be, if you are presuming things about women that are stereotypical and then, you know, coming at them with that in a negative way, in online or in person, like that is unfortunately expands the, you know, spans the entire political spectrum, that ability, right? And it is not just men, it is also women that perpetuate that toxic masculinity, right? That, you know, the patriarchy. So, you know, I absolutely agree. And I think that every time we see it on the left, we need to call it out, because that's not acceptable. I came to the left because this is where I felt safest. I felt safest as a woman. I felt safest as a, you know, LGBT person. You know, like I came here for solidarity. I didn't come here to get another man telling me what I can and cannot say or do. Right. So that's exactly why not start this podcast for that reason, right? So, you know, I think, yeah, the more that we talk about it, the more we make it unacceptable. And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because it's not okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah, and thanks for all you're doing. It's really important that we support independent podcasts. And you mentioned I was starting one, and I have one that's coming out soon. It's called The Politics of Survival with Tara Reid. Yeah. So, and RT was kind enough to give the platform for that. So I appreciate them. And yeah, and it's going to be really, really wonderful to be able to explore different issues and kind of move beyond what happened to me, but onto other things. So
absolutely. Yeah. I'm so excited to hear what you have to say. And on a lot of subjects, I want to hear your voice. You are, I like I said, I identify with you a lot. Yeah, you sort of made me feel like it was okay to speak out a little bit, even though I'm not a survivor. I just identify with
you. Well, you know, you're a good troll slayer. I noticed, like, seeing you on Twitter, and I really appreciate your support.
Oh, thank you.
I've seen you out there really defending survivors in general and talking about the subject. Actually, I'm misogynistic, and you call it out, and you're really good. And I really appreciate that. I think that you've got a good vision for, you know, how we can go. And I know it's really hard to leave the Democratic cult, as Rose McGowan coined it. And you saw our talk that we did together. But yeah, she coined it, and it's true. It's almost like a deprogramming, isn't it? Like, you had to go through the Ryan Knight deprogramming.
Yes.
and the Peter Dow, and, you know, and kind of, and you know, what's really been sad for me has been seeing some of the lefty fights. Because I have this great admiration for Glenn Greenwald, but then I also support Chelsea Manning, and that happened last week, and that was super sad to see, because I think both of them are amazing. I don't know either of them, but personally, but I just know of them. And Glenn Greenwald's done this amazing investigative reporting, and Chelsea Manning is a hero and has gone through hell and beyond, and then and is quite the activist. And then you have you know, I spoke out in defense of Ryan Grimm, who you wouldn't know. I wouldn't be here on your show if it weren't for Ryan Grimm. Ryan Grimm was the bravest journalist who uncovered the first piece on Time's Up. And that is the foundation for all the investigative reporting that has been done to date. And it's because of Ryan Grimm. And he kind of brought to light the corruption. He broke the Blasey Ford. He broke my story. And then I was on Katie Halper. But he's an amazing investigative journalist. And I also adore Jackson Hinkle, and I think he's amazing. And then he was criticizing Ryan Grimm, but in a kind of a way I didn't really like. And I kind of inserted myself in the conversation and said, please stop, because I keep getting these people on there criticizing Ryan Grimm. And I feel like saying to them, look, you wouldn't even be on my Twitter. Like, you wouldn't know who I was if it wasn't for this person saying this happened. If he was an establishment shill, he would have never covered my story. He took so much heat professionally. And wow. So did many, like Katie Halper did, Megyn Kelly, all of them that covered my story took so much crap professionally. Yeah. And Rose McGowan got suppressed. She had her music that was coming out. New York Times basically wouldn't cover her anymore because of her support of me. So I feel the sense of responsibility when I see, you know, someone going out. Ryan was like, I feel personally responsible for some of the heat he took professionally, just covering my story. And Rich McHugh, same thing. Aww. And I don't know, like, I feel like it's the elite's dream to have the lefties go at it, right? Mm-hmm. Or people with leftist kind of views.
Right. It's hard. And it's funny you mentioned that, because I'm working with a group called United Left. And what we're trying to do is exactly that, trying to, you know, cool all the fires and get us to work together on issues we agree on. So, you know, it's difficult, and this stuff is really passionate, but I think it's important for us to remember that some of the reason that we have this infighting is because it gets other people noticed and it gets clicks, right? And like, official as that is, unfortunately, like that is how internet works. And unfortunately, these people need to make a living, right? So, you know, it makes sense maybe for Jackson Hinkle to rip on Ryan Grimm because he's trying to get in with the people who hate Ryan Grimm crowd or something, you know, and like that, that's unfortunate. But I think as consumers of leftist media, we need to take it with a grain of salt. We need to recognize that, like, if we all were in a room together, I've had my beef too, you know, like I've been around for 5 minutes, but I've had my beef with people too. And if I were in a room with those people, I would still shake their hands and have a friendly conversation. If Ryan Grimm and Jimmy Dore were in the same room together, they would probably shake hands and have a friendly conversation for half a minute. Jimmy Dore would probably say something, and you know, that would incite something. But you know,
But we need the Ryan Grimms. Like, okay, like I really appreciate like you and other podcast commentators. Like, and Katie Helper is a podcast person. That's, you know, she's not an investigative journalist. I appreciate all of, you know, and Jackson, same thing. He's a podcast, you know, host, and he's a, you know, not an investigative journalist, but we need those. We need Glenn Greenwald. We need Ryan Grimm because they're so few. Like, they're so few, and Rich McHugh. And there's certainly even fewer that are trauma informed. So that even more narrows the playing, you know, the game. And what if they're going to criticize somebody, why pick someone who actually isn't going to talk openly about their politics? Because they can't, because they're an investigative journalist. It's really not their role. Like, I think, you know, I don't even know what Ryan Grimm's politics are, but I know what they're not. I mean, if he were pro Biden, he would have never, ever had a conversation with me. He would have never then gone to the trouble of clearing my name, doing all that investigative reporting that no one else did, to clear my name of the perjury. Yeah. And then called out the New York Times. I mean, when you're an investigative reporter, to call out the New York Times is like, that's a big deal, because you're calling out colleagues that could, you know, purposefully make it difficult for you to get seen, your work to get seen. Yeah. So I guess I just feel like some of these journalists that we are taking for granted are not getting awards, and they should be. Yes. For their journalistic work. They're like doing all the hard labor and all the heavy lifting. And then like my story went to the main, if you noticed, The Intercept is the one that broke the Blasey Ford, broke mine, broke Time's Up. And then it went to corporate media. See, it used to be the other way around. Corporate media used to break, and then independent media would cover it. Now it's independent media breaks it, or, you know, in that case, The Intercept did. And then they finally covered it because they were forced to. So I guess I really want that to be taken more seriously, that we have so few true journalists. So why are you going to marginalize and get rid of one? Because you don't think he's critical enough of AOC. Who freaking cares? Like, be critical of AOC, like, on your own. That we really need good reporters. And if you're going to go after some reporters, go after the legacy media reporters that are suppressing and omitting real news and not covering the stories because of, you know, corporate, you know, ties.
Yeah.
Don't go after the ones that are, like, go after the ones who are working. It almost makes me wonder if some of those people are plants mm-hmm. to try to divide the left. And that's what I don't know. Like, I mean, I know Jackson Hinkle obviously is not a plant, but I mean, other than those trolls that are online and whatnot, are they?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of them. But the, I mean, that's a good point. That's a good point. You know, but I think there is also, you know, something to be said about, I mean, I think Ryan Grimm's issue came to the forefront around like the force the vote thing. And then, you know, like Jimmy was really hard on him and then everybody piled on. And I also think that because he's still working for The Intercept and for Rising after Crystal and Sagar left, and didn't they get bought out by a billionaire? Or am I thinking of something else? I don't remember.
I don't know. No, you're thinking of something else. That was Young Turks got bought out by a billionaire.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know about Rising. I don't know anything about Rising. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, whatever. I don't follow this stuff. I don't have skin in this game. Yeah. But, you know, I think that, you know, my message to my viewers would be like, please take all of this infighting with a grain of salt and know that, you know, Ryan Grimm does amazing work. You're absolutely right. He does amazing work. And we don't have enough investigative reporters. You're absolutely right about that. And we depend on them. And certainly the corporate media is just getting more and more fluffy and less substantial. And especially as, you know, more and more people are realizing that the system is, you know, eating them alive, essentially, then, you know, the less that the corporate media will be connected to reality at this point. Like you made a very insightful observation that, you know, it's flipped. That, you know, like you could see that also with the BLM movement last summer. You know, a lot of the footage that the corporate news was using was footage of people, independent journalists that were on the ground and just live streamed to Twitter. You know, I mean, that's a huge difference. And I think that also means, you know, that we have a lot more power than we think we do when it comes to grassroots media. And so that's why I'm so happy that you were willing to come on the show. And I'm so grateful that you're willing to take the time to do this with not just me, but other, you know, small podcast hosts. And I, you know, I really, really appreciate it. And I hope that, you know, that I can continue to, you know, fight for you on Twitter and spread the good word. And, you know, again, like right now is a moment in time, right? Like right now is a moment in time. It's really hard to see out of it. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of women are going to look at your story or look back at your story and say, wow, yeah, I see that.
The history of it. Yeah. Well, thank you. And we need to support each other and like you said, kind of unify the left and the sense about certain issues and that we're trying to get forward and get forward to the public in a way that's, you know, we can make systemic change. So thanks for all you're doing and having me and, you know, look for my podcast that's coming left, yes, you know, please. And, that's Politics of Survival with Tara Reid. And then check out my book, Left Out, When the Truth Doesn't Fit In. And hopefully you like it.
Yes, so, you will. Everyone will like it. We all want you to do the audiobook. I know other people have asked you about that.
I am working on it. I have been a procrastinator. I am working on the audiobook as we speak. So,
yes,
so it is coming.
But go read it because I read it and I read it on my Kindle and I'm still going to download the audiobook when it comes out because I want to hear you read it. So,
oh, yeah. Thank you. I am doing voices. So I am imitating voices. So you even hear me do a Ronan Farrow imitation. So it's awesome.
So. That is exciting.
And then I did an but they're all nice ones. I mean, like, you know, not, I mean, cause I love him. He's amazing. And I love his book, you know, Catch and Kill, which people quote often. But I had some bad experiences with journalists and, I do go into that. That was with Washington Post. Luckily, you know, Ronan, Rich McHugh, Megyn Kelly, Katie Halper, all of them were so gracious and kind. And I was very lucky. I was going to say Rose McGowan is amazing. She did the foreword to my book. She's an amazing creative force and activist. She's like right there for survivors, and her book Brave is amazing. And her music that she did, her music album, Planet Nine, she composed that. It's beautiful. It's absolutely, and it has theta beats, which are very healing for survivors. So you put your earphones on and listen to it, and it's amazing.
Yes, I did. I did listen to it, and it's awesome. It's very relaxing. I can definitely meditate to it. So, and the book is amazing. Yeah. She is fire. What she says is fire. The way she says it is fire. I do recommend her audio as well. So absolutely.
To have them. Yeah. So anyway, thank you. And thank you. We'll talk again, and I hope I see you at the troll slaying in the meantime.
Absolutely. Let's do it. Absolutely. Okay. So much.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Take care.
You may have noticed that I don't do live streams. It's a lot, and I'm like one person, okay? But I would still love to be able to uplift your voices the way that live streamers do by highlighting your chats or your indie businesses, because I know how hard it is for a millennial out here, and I'm happy to share my platform with people who support me. If you would like to see your comment or small business promo scrolling at the bottom of my screen, then go to ko-b.com/millensplain and buy me a coffee for $3. If you would like to ask me a question and actually get a response, then buy me 2 coffees at $6, and I will put your question in my next Q&A episode. If you would like to insult me, I can take it. I got a thick skin, and honestly, I have a good sense of humor as well. Like my upcoming Q&A episodes, I will be doing special insult episodes. So if you would like to see your insult on my insult highlight reel episode, and possibly get one back, then please buy me 2 coffees for $6. Then I'll be more than happy to clap back. Listen, I've been through hard times myself. And if you're really, really struggling and trying to start a business, if you need mutual aid help, you can always message me on Twitter or at melensplain@gmail.com. And I will try to help you. That goes for anybody who needs to escape a bad situation, to anybody trying to start a small business. It's important to me that I lift up all of our voices and not just mine. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, this is my second side hustle. I love being able to speak out on these issues, but the reality of the situation is in this capitalist hell that we live in. If I don't make any money from doing this, then I have to stop doing it altogether. Right now, living paycheck to paycheck for me doesn't actually even cut it. That's why I need your help. I don't have a Patreon. I can't offer you more content than what I put out publicly. I don't have the time, I don't have the money, and I don't have the energy. If you want to see more content and you want special member features, you have a PayPal account that you can donate to, then support me and together we can make it happen. If not, I will fade away into the ether. As always, for all my links, please go to melensplain.com. Thank you.